ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 2. We are beginning this chapter this day. The chapter is entitled The Activities of Maharaj Agnidra. The previous chapter, yesterday we had concluded the previous chapter, which is entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrat. From today, his son Agnidra has begun. Text number 1. Please repeat after me.
Shri Shuka Uvacha Evam Pitari Sampravritte Tat Anushasane Vartamanah Agnidhrah Jambu Dvipa Okasah Prajaha Aurasavat Dharma Avekshamanah Paryagopayat.
Since this is not in any specific meter, I'll just read it out, and maybe you can try to recite after me.
Evam pitari sampravritte tad anushasane ana agnidhro jambu dvipaukasah praja aurasavat dharma vekshamanah paryagopayat.
Once again.
Evam pitari sampravritte tad anushasane vartamana agnidhro jambu dvipaukasah praja aurasavat dharma vekshamanah paryagopayat.
Please repeat the word for word meaning.
Shri Shukadev Goswami Uvacha said, Evam, thus, Pitari, when his father, Sampravritte, took to the path of liberation, Tat Anushasane, according to his order, Vartamanah, situated, Agnidhrah, King Agnidhra, Jambu Dvipa Okasah, the inhabitants of Jambu Dvipa, Prajaha, citizens, Aurasavat, as if they were his sons, Dharma, religious principles, Avekshamanah, strictly observing, Paryagopayat, completely protected. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation. Shri Sukadeva Goswami continued, after his father, Maharaj Priyavrat departed to follow the path of spiritual life by undergoing, King Agnidhra completely obeyed his order, strictly observing the principles of religion. he gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudvip as if they were his own begotten sons. Please repeat. Shri Shukadev Goswami continued, after his father, Maharaj Priyavrata, departed to follow the path of spiritual life by undergoing austerities, King Agnidhra completely obeyed his order, strictly observing the principles of religion. He gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudvipa, his own begotten sons. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Following the instruction of his father, Maharaj Priyavrata, Maharaj Agnidhra ruled the inhabitants of Jambudvipa according to religious principles. These principles are exactly contrary to the modern principles of faithlessness. As clearly stated here, the king protected the citizens the way a father protects his begotten children. How he ruled the citizens is also described here, dharma avekshamanaha, strictly according to religious principles. It is the duty of the executive head of a state to see that the citizens strictly follow religious principles. The Vedic religious principles begin with varnashrama dharma, the duties of the four varnas and four ashramas. Dharma refers to principles given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The first principle of dharma or religion is to observe the duties of the four orders as enjoined by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the people's qualities and activities, society should be divided into brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras, and then again into brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas and sannyasis. These are religious principles, and it is the duty of the head of state to see that his citizens strictly follow them. He should not merely act officially, he should be like a father who is always a well-wisher of his sons. Such a father strictly observes whether his sons are performing their duties, and sometimes he also punishes them. Just contrary to the principles mentioned here, the presidents and chief executives in the age of Kali are simply tax collectors who do not care whether religious principles are observed. Indeed, the chief executives of the present day introduce all kinds of sinful activity, especially illicit sex, intoxication, animal killing. These sinful activities are now very prominently manifested in India. Although 100 years ago, these four principles of sinful life were strictly prohibited in the families of India, they have now been introduced into every Indian family. Therefore, they cannot follow religious principles. In contrast to the principles of the kings of old, the modern state is concerned only with propaganda for levying taxes and is no longer responsible for the spiritual welfare of the citizens. The state is now callous to religious principles. Srimad Bhagavatam predicts that in the Kali Yuga, the government will be entrusted with Dasyu Dharma, which means the occupational duty of rogues and thieves. Modern heads of state are rogues and thieves who plunder the citizens instead of giving them protection. Rogues and thieves plunder without regard for law. But in this age of Kali, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, the lawmakers themselves plunder the citizens. The next prediction to be fulfilled, which is already coming to pass, is that because of the sinful activities and the government, rain will become increasingly scarce. Gradually there will be complete drought and no production of food grains. People will be reduced to eating flesh and seeds, and many good, spiritually inclined people will have to forsake their homes because they will be too harassed by drought, taxation and famine. The Krishna consciousness movement is the only hope to save the world from such devastation. It is the most scientific and authorized movement for the actual welfare of the whole human society. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya. ज्ञानांजनाशलाकया मीलितम् येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते। कांचना गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। इट्स इंडीड वन ऑफ मिरेकल्स दैट यू नो इन सच एन ऑगस्ट असेंबली ऑफ डिवोटीज हियर इन वृंदावन अ लोली क्रीचर लाइक माई सेल्फ इज given the honor and the opportunity to speak from Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm extremely grateful to the temple management and to the devotees for this great opportunity. And I pray at the lotus feet of each and every one of the devotees here, you are all Dhamvasis, to please bestow your mercy upon me so that I may speak something of value. So actually in this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the activities of the great personalities, the kings, are described. One of the 10 symptoms of a Mahapurana is Manvantara, which means the activities of the kings, great saintly kings, Rajarshis, of these pious dynasties who ruled the earth, and the lessons that we derive from their glorious lives. So here, the activities of Maharaj Agnidra, the son of Maharaj Privrata, has been described. So here, we can see that Maharaj Agnidra, the first quality that is mentioned is that he is completely obedient to the order of his father. So one becomes a leader not through manipulation or through popular vote as it is today, but by the order of a superior authority. So that is the real bona fide way one actually becomes a leader. That's how it is. So leaders in the Vedic culture were nominated rather than elected by the people in general. It's because only a superior personality can empower and can bless his subordinate to actually stand up to the expectations of a leader. So without the blessings of superior personalities and the authorities, one can never render services, you know, which are in the leadership position. So that is the first lesson we hear from, we learn from this section. That is, Agnidra completely obeyed his order. Strictly observing religious principles, he gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudvip as if they were his own begotten children, begotten sons. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that the leaders in the Vedic times, they ruled based on the principle of faith in the scriptures, as opposed to the modern principles. One of the founding principles of modern democracy in India is so-called secularism, which means no partiality to any particular religion. But that actually, in practice, what is happening is it is converted into atheism. In the name of secularism, people are completely, or the government has completely avoided religion altogether. So this is the signal of disaster, because if as soon as you separate government from religion, immediately the guiding principle is lost. Because the Brahmanas are the guiding principle, or the Vedas are the guiding principle of how to conduct the society. But when that is lost, then it becomes, as Prabhupada points out, a body without a head. So that's what we see today. Prabhupada also emphatically points out the evils of modern governments and modern democracy. Like today we can see that on one hand, the government is very concerned about how to stop corruption. The government is, and at the same time they are concerned about how to stop crime, especially in the recent several months we have been reading in the newspapers so many cases of sexual abuse, rape, and the government is so concerned about how to prevent or how to protect the citizens. But actually, on the other hand, they are promoting all sorts of sensuous activities through the media, through the television, and through other media. On one hand, they are promoting sensuous life, but on the other hand, they want to prevent crime and sexual abuse. So this is contradictory, because they have no... Because as it said, as Prabhupada says, modern principles of faithlessness. Because they don't have faith in the scriptures, they have no idea of how to tackle these problems in the society. So actually, as it is mentioned about Maharaj Agnidra, similarly in elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of Maharaj Prithu have been described on a similar note. Maharaj Prithu also was a leader, cared for his citizens just like his sons. One of the important points that's mentioned in the purport is the ruler would rule the citizens, treating them as his own sons. He would protect them. The word kshatriya means one who protects from being hurt. Kshatatrayate. But protection from what? What does a kshatriya protect from? There are two types of protection. Protection from the external aggression, and also protection from the internal enemies. It's not that a kshatriya protects only from the neighboring kings or from some aggressors outside. A ruler is supposed to provide protection to his citizens from the enemies within, especially lust. So that's the prerogative, or that's the responsibility of every leader, to protect the citizens from the internal enemies. of which the modern rulers have absolutely no idea how to protect from the internal enemies. What does that mean? That means to organize society in such a way that the lower propensities, the lower animalistic propensities present within every human being are kept under control. There is a famous thinker, philosopher in the West, Sigmund Freud. He understood this principle that in every human being there is a lower tendency, there is a lower nature. Animalistic desires, which are very base, which are very mean, and which are totally irrational. So that's his understanding. And he said that they have to be kept under control in order to maintain order and peace in the society. Unless these lower tendencies are kept under control, there'll be chaos. So that's his philosophy. But the thing is that he has very little idea of how to keep those lower tendencies under control. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki, Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar ki, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki. So, and also the most important point that he missed is that although he knew, he understood that there are lower tendencies within every human being, he could not come to the point of understanding that there is a soul, spirit soul within every living being, which is originally very pure. And all these materialistic tendencies are actually just because of the covering or because of the covering of false ego present over the soul. So that part he couldn't grasp. So therefore he concluded that basically, originally, every human being is bad. Everyone is bad. you have to keep the lower tendencies under control. But actually the Vedic teaching, although it acknowledges that within every human being, because of our past life, the conditioning which we have been bringing forth since many, many births from the animal species, we do have those lower tendencies. No doubt. But originally we are all pure entities. We are pure spiritual entities. So that part, could not be understood by these Western philosophers. So the only way to keep these lower tendencies under control is by understanding and living by the knowledge of our spiritual identity. When we understand who we originally are, what our spiritual nature, Krishna says, evam buddhe param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasatam. In the third chapter, last verse, Krishna says that knowing yourself to be the spirit soul, which is above even the intelligence, and by use of intelligence you control your mind, and in this way you conquer the foremost enemy in the form of lust. So that is Krishna's teaching to Arjuna. So unless people understand their spiritual identity, there is no way they can actually, effectively subdue their lower tendencies. So therefore, Prabhupada points out that therefore unless one has faith in the spiritual reality, there is no way there can be good governance. And because they don't understand this principle, how much ever they try, these modern leaders, to create order and peace within society, their attempts are not only failures, but they in fact aggravate the problem. Because unless you come to the root cause of the problem, every solution that you try to, implement actually aggravates the problem. So that's what we are seeing today. Despite the modern technological advancement and newer means used to, control or to prevent corruption, there is more and more corruption. There is more and more crime. So unless the heart is cleaned, there can be no real peace. There can be no real happiness within society. And here another important lesson that we learn is that a leader is a servant. Leader is not, the position of leadership is not a position to enjoy. It is a position of service. So unless one lives by this understanding, the leaders will be naturally, will be, not only will they be miserable, but they will be ineffective. Because as we know, every leader is simply today, in the modern scenario, they simply want to protect their position and to accumulate as much wealth as possible when they are ruling. But in the Vedic culture, the kings, they led as a responsibility, as a service. And at the same time, although they would enjoy, the kings, because of their tremendous amount of responsibility that they are shouldering, they were given a certain license of some special privileges, some special facilities and privileges, like they could have, they could marry many wives. They could enjoy sense gratification, which is not possible for a layman to enjoy. They were acting in the mode of passion. So although they were having these privileges, they at the same time were guided by the Brahmanas. Therefore they knew that at one point of time they had to give up their kingdom and, you know, completely dedicate themselves to spiritual pursuit. That's what they did. Although they were in the most royal palaces with the extreme type of opulence and enjoyment, when the time came for them to renounce and enter into vanaprastha life, then they would leave. Can you imagine leaving all this extreme luxury, extreme comfort and sense gratification, and all of a sudden they go to the forest where there are no attached bathrooms. There is nothing, you know, you have to just stay under a tree amongst the wild animals. So, you know, that they were, they knew they had to do that and they were prepared to do that. So, therefore that training was there. And that's why the kings, they knew that, you know, because I'm only here for some time. This is not, it's not that, you know, till the fag end of life. Like there is one infamous example of this, Dhritarashtra. His very name suggests that Dhritarashtra, he wanted to keep the, he wanted to hold on to his kingdom till the fag end of his life. But it was not, you know, finally until Vidura came and told him that, you know, what are you doing? And he chastises him and then he leaves finally. But otherwise in the Vedic culture, the kings, they knew they had to retire at some point of time. So therefore, as long as I'm here on this throne, let me do as much service as I can. Because I'm not going to stay here permanently. They had that understanding. So the point is that that training is essential for a leader. Unless leaders are trained, well trained in the Vedic principles, then, you know, the society, there's a saying, yatha raja tatha praja. The kings are naturally the leaders of the society and therefore the common people will follow, as Krishna points out in the Bhagavad Gita. So if the king is a dacoit, if the leaders are, you know, thieves and rogues, naturally the common people also, you know, will end up becoming thieves and rogues. But if the kings are responsible, then that's the same quality that the follows also will try to pursue. We see that in our day-to-day dealings as well. The kind of training that even home the parents give, how the parents behave, that has a tremendous impact on the children. That's what the children pick up. And that remains with them throughout their whole lives. So leader at every level has a tremendous responsibility. So therefore, Prithu Maharaj, he himself was not, there is a description in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where Prithu Maharaj, when he would enter his kingdom, the citizens there was an outpour of their, you know, love for the king, in the form of, you know, how they would receive the king, with all sorts of musical instruments. They would dance, sing and glorify King Prithu. And when Maharaj Prithu enters, amidst all this glorification and the celebration by the citizens, he was not in the least affected by all this glorification. In fact, when the professional reciters would glorify King Prithu of his wonderful qualities, he chastised them, saying that, you know, I haven't yet manifested all these qualities. I've just been coronated. Why are you glorifying me? So, King Prithu was not in the least affected. Then we have seen how he would honor and serve the great personalities. The four Kumaras, when they entered his kingdom, he would serve them with rapt attention, great respect. It's mentioned that just as a person attached to sense gratification runs after the objects of the senses, with the same eagerness, Maharaj Prithu received the four Kumaras and served them and heard from them. So that is the standard. So Prithu Maharaj, as an ideal leader, he is not a leader to exploit. He is a leader to serve on the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, there is another example which the other extreme, or what a leader should not be. His own father Vena Maharaj, he was also a leader, very powerful leader, strong leader. But what is the difference between the two? Vena Maharaj was doing it for his own sense gratification. He was not acting on behalf of God. He was considered himself to be God. So therefore, he was removed. He was killed. So therefore, the people, in general, they want to be leaders, those who are leaders in today's scenario, they want to be leaders because they want the power, the prestige, and the facilities that come with the leadership. So therefore, a good leader is a good servant. One who is a good servant only can actually be a good leader. We have several examples of this in the Vedic culture. We hear the story of Maharaj Shibi. Shibi was a ruler who, Prabhupada points out here, he treated every citizen as his subject. Prabhupada says that not just the human beings, but even the animals. Even the animals are subjects of the kingdom. They are citizens as well. So therefore, Maharaj Shibi treated every living being, not just the humans, but even the animals, as his children. And once, as he was in his assembly, sitting in his assembly, a pigeon came flying in and sought shelter at the feet of Maharaj Shibi. He said that, I'm in danger, please save me. And Maharaj Shibi said, yes, I offer you my protection. Don't fear. What happened? What is the trouble? He said, there's a hawk which is chasing me. And then says, by that time the hawk flies in. And then Maharaj Shibi tells the hawk that, no, you cannot eat this pigeon. I have offered him protection. Then the hawk says that, my natural food is the pigeons. Then how am I supposed to subsist? Then Shibi says that, okay, whatever amount of flesh or whatever weight of flesh is present in the pigeon, I offer my own flesh of equal weight for you. Because as the hawk is also one of his subjects, it is also the responsibility of the king to provide for it. So then Maharaj Shivi, he brings the weighing scales. He places the pigeon on one side of the scale and he cuts out flesh from his own body, from his thighs, and puts it on the other scale. But surprisingly, however much flesh he would put on, the pigeon remained heavier. The scales wouldn't turn. So he started removing more and more of his flesh. But still, there's no change. So therefore, finally, Maharaj Shivi himself sits on the other side of the scale and says, "Now you can eat me." So then, at that point of time, the pigeon and the hawk turn into demigods, Indra and Agni. And they say that, "We have come here in this form just to test your qualities." So therefore, we may say, "Oh, this is a Puranic story." But even now, even recently, we have seen such leaders. There is a queen of Indore, recently, not very much in the past. Her name is Rani Ahilya Bai. She had a grandson. She was a very just ruler. And the rule or the law there was that anyone who is caught or who is proven to have raped a woman, the punishment for that crime is to have his head crushed under the legs of the elephant. So that was the law. And one day it was brought to her notice that her own grandson had committed that crime. So naturally, her own grandson means naturally she's very dear to her, but still she gave the same punishment to him. So the point is, a leader, it's not that, only my son or my grandson is my grandson and everyone else is foreign. That means she treated everyone equally. Everyone had subjects, children. So we see these examples, not that, only in the distant past, but even in the recent history, we see that. Great leaders, like Abraham Lincoln, George Washington and others, we see how initially they came from a very, very impoverished background and they had to struggle a lot to reach positions of leadership. And finally, when they reached that position, they worked hard to help the downtrodden. And recently, this African leader, Nelson Mandela, had passed away. And he, I think it was 26 or 27 years that he was in prison, working for, fighting for justice against apartheid. So we have these, we have such examples even today. So that principle, to the degree one follows, there are two ways leaders can try to please their followers. Actually, how modern leadership works, of course, it's also democracy. Therefore, there are charismatic leaders today as well. But what they do is, they provide for the sense gratification of the subjects. And generally during election times, what the leaders do, they offer wine and money. They distribute free wine and money, cash, and then they purchase the votes. So that person is happy. Okay, I got my bottle of wine, liquor, and then some money, so I'll vote for this party. Or, if not so gross, some parties or political parties, they promise that, we'll provide you these material facilities. And that's how they try to win the favor of the people. In fact, them is degraded to such an extent that a good government is seen, which is a good government, which can provide for my sense gratification in a better way. So that's what the leaders also try to do. by offering sense gratification, they win the favor of the citizens. They please the citizens. So, but that kind of pleasing, that kind of, and the citizens are happy and they vote for him. But at the end, it's only at the end, much later, that they realize that ultimately they are not happy. Their problems are not solved. The situation is worse. But on the other hand, a religious leader, he's very strong. Even sometimes he may have to face opposition. A good leader has to face opposition. A strong leader does face opposition. But despite opposition, a leader, a good leader, sticks to his principles. And he only gives what is right, not what is demanded by the people. But ultimately at the end, the result is always good. And that's how the people become happy. The people were happy in the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthir and Lord Ram, not because they, you know, gave liquor bottles, but because their rule was so good, their ruling was so good that at the end, because of the dharma that they have practiced, there was prosperity. Because when dharma is practiced, naturally there is artha. And there is then kama, sense gratification. So because the leaders protected dharma, therefore there was prosperity. And that's why the citizens, because they were happy ultimately, therefore they loved the leaders. Not by giving short-term goals or short-term pleasures that the leader actually is supposed to please the citizens. He is supposed to please the citizens by giving the long-term benefits. Unlike what the leaders today do. We can see that even at every level, even within our own society, that when the leader is exemplary, when he sets a good example in terms of his not only his own spiritual life, his own spiritual standards, but at the same time, he is strong, but at the same time, he is committed to the welfare of the followers. In the long run, there is not only growth, but there is, the people are happy, and decade after decade, they can stay happy in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, when the leader looks after short-term pleasures, where in whichever yatras, wherever the leaders looked for immediate benefits in terms of temples built, or number of books distributed, or all sorts of such success stories. Just for that, when the leaders had exploited the devotees, there was some success at the beginning. But at the end, we have seen that the entire thing collapsed. But on the other hand, when the leader keeps the followers' well-being, spiritual well-being and happiness as his priority, and so-called success comes later. He's not worried about his success, but he's worried about the subordinates being happy in Krishna consciousness. Then at the end, the success also follows. And that stays. So that's a very important principle that we can take from here. So he's not concerned with his own name and fame, his own well-being, but actually he's concerned with the benefit of his citizens. So these are some of the thoughts from this particular verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. As Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, that the Krishna consciousness movement is the only hope to save the world from such devastation. So therefore Prabhupada, that means that Prabhupada wanted the devotees to be the leaders of society. Leadership is power. the Brahminical type of leadership. The Brahminical type of leadership is actually based on inspiration, offering inspiration and guidance rather than governing. So therefore, we have to strive to develop the qualities of the leaders. In the modern society, people want to be leaders, but they don't strive for the qualifications of the leader. But on the other hand, we as devotees should aspire for the qualifications, the qualities of a leader, rather than the opportunity to be a leader. Opportunity comes on its own. So what a devotee looks for is not the opportunity, but the qualification. Sometimes we also, some devotees, we can see that when they run after opportunity, when they run after position, of course, to serve, or, you know, some other facilities. Then what happens is their attention is diverted from internal development rather than internal development they are after. But instead, if devotees focus on their own internal development and sadhana, internal growth, becoming qualified, developing the qualities and qualifications to be a good leader, then Krishna will send the opportunity when the time is ripe. So these are some of the lessons that we... Anyone has any questions, comments? This may be one question. His question is how one can be in a managerial position and be humble at the same time. Well, unless one is humble, one cannot, you know, remain in that position for long. Because, as I said, the more of a servant one is, the more he is actually qualified to be a leader. So a leader is supposed to be the best servant. And you cannot serve unless you have humility. If you are proud, how can you be a servant? If you want to serve someone, naturally you are in a lower position than the master. So unless you are humble, you cannot serve. So therefore, if a leader has to be a servant, then he has to be humble. Otherwise, the only other option is he becomes exploitative. If he becomes exploitative, then naturally the subordinates may fall out of fear. They may have maybe respect or fear, but then if they don't get the sufficient inspiration, the care, from the leader, then naturally they won't follow from their heart. So especially in ISKCON, it's a society where everyone is serving voluntarily. We are not paying here anyone. Everyone is serving out of their own, you know, voluntary desire to serve. So therefore, unless a leader wins the hearts of the subordinates, then the subordinates are not going to, you know, follow him or cooperate him for much long. So therefore, it is essential to be humble, especially one who is in a leadership position for some time. In ISKCON, they must have... It doesn't take very long for them to realize this point, that unless they actually be humble, nobody will love them or serve them, or in other words, follow them so for a long time. So because it's based on inspiration, it's based on love and trust, which can only be earned through humble service attitude.
Anything else? Well, good point. Being humble doesn't mean being naive or stupid. One has to be intelligent, no doubt. A leader has to be intelligent. Especially, Prabhupada says, Jai Krishna Bhajai Se Bada Chatur. A devotee, a person who worships Krishna, is very intelligent. And especially in politics or in management, intelligence is the power. The knowledge is the power. It is said the king's greatest power is the spy. That means the more information you have about the enemy, the more powerful you are. It is through intelligence only that all these leaders, they had conquered other nations. We can see in the Mahabharata as well, how Krishna was so smart that he, in fact, on the other hand, Shakuni, on the side of the Kauravas, he used diplomacy and cunningness, as you said, to cheat the Pandavas. The Pandavas were simple, especially Yudhishthira Maharaj. But the thing is that Krishna was with him, but Krishna was the most cunning. No one can be more cunning than Krishna. So therefore, it is not that a devotee has to be, very naive or in that way. He is not expert, but he's supposed to be, all the same, especially if he's a leader, especially if he's in politics, one has to be very intelligent at the same time. One has to know his own strengths and weaknesses well, and as well as those of the others. Then only he can actually sustain as a leader. But that is required, especially in modern. I don't agree that only the cunning, only the humble people cannot be leaders. It's not like that. Yudhishthira Maharaj was most humble, but at the same time he was the leader. He became a leader. But, in Kali Yuga, the miscreants are empowered by Kali. The miscreants are empowered by Kali, but the arch enemy of Kali is Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the arch. Mahaprabhu's movement is the arch rival of Kali Yuga. So if one takes shelter, that's what Prabhupada says at the end, that Krishna consciousness movement is the only hope. So if someone takes shelter of the Krishna consciousness movement, then of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then definitely Kali strikes or Kali cannot have any influence. Definitely, that's what, like, we should look for the qualification. We need leaders in every field. We need leaders, you know, in the field of politics, in the field of education. We need leaders in the field of, in every field. Like, we need even to use the media. Sankirtan means to use everything in Krishna's service. So, we need to train and equip and empower our own devotees to actually qualify themselves to be leaders in every front, including politics. Prabhupada wanted that, of course. But the thing is not that you prematurely jump into politics, but first, you need to qualify yourself in that direction. But at some point of time, it's going to happen. May not be right now, but yeah, thank you. Thank you all very much. గ్రంథరాజ్ శ్రీమద్భాగవతం శిల ప్రభుపాదకి గౌర ప్రేమానందే హరి హరి బోల్.